Welcome to episode 4 of Barking Out Loud, a podcast hosted by Butler 360 Sports students here at Butler University. My name is Nick Kuster, and alongside me today is Butler 360 Sports analyst Chelsea Groves. Chelsea, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I cannot complain. It's Friday and the sun is out, so I am happy. Three major talking points today with men's basketball. We're first going to talk about the 74-72 loss at Seton Hall on Wednesday, and then we're going to preview a couple things. We're going to preview the game at Creighton coming up on Sunday, and then we're going to preview a little bit farther ahead into the season with the Big East tournament and then ultimately the NCAA tournament at the end of the year. But let's first get into the Seton Hall game. Obviously, 74-72 loss at the buzzer. Before we get to that buzzer beater and what we thought about it, what were your general reactions to this game as a whole?
Yeah, I think Butler needed this game ultimately for confidence after that home loss against Georgetown. And I think that Butler looked succinct in this game. They're able to generate offense. They led at the half 34-28. And one interesting stat that I thought was really convincing for this Butler team was that they're 15-1 when leading at the half. And then this game did not go as planned. But four players in double digits. Thompson's 12 are huge. 12 points that Butler has not gotten in a while. And 37 minutes from him coming off that concussion. I thought that Butler reinforced that they're a top 25 team despite getting beat by a team that's in the top 20. So I don't think it's really necessarily a bad loss with how tough the Big East is top to bottom.
I mean, you go on the road at the team who's leading in the Big East Conference at 11-3 now. So, you know, ultimately you're not expected to win that game. And so they go into that game with a chance to prove themselves and bounce back after the home loss to Georgetown that past weekend. But what also impressed me a lot was the play of Bryce Golden. He really stepped up, and he got into foul trouble in the second half, which really ultimately kind of slowed him down. But he was a huge piece for that Butler team, especially in the first half and even a little bit in the second half. You know, the announcers couldn't get enough of what he was doing on the floor, especially when you go up against a guy over 7 feet tall in Romero Gill, which I have something about that last play in him in a little bit.
Yes.
But also, one other thing just about this game, from my point of view, so Sean McDermott, yes, he hit a couple threes at the end of the game, and he hit a three at the beginning of the game. But in really the chunk of the basketball game, to me, he felt like he almost was like non-existent on the floor. Like, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I think the one thing with Sean McDermott, the best quality of his game is him curling off screens. You have guards looking for him, the one and the two. He's kind of that stretch two or three kind of player. So I think him coming off screens, him not putting the ball on the floor a ton is when he is most productive for this Butler team. And I think if teams can take that element away from him, which Seton Hall did for a large chunk of the game, that is why he comes across as silent.
Yeah, and it was like, so it was one of the last, Butler hit three threes late in the game, sent ultimately what we thought was going to be sending it to overtime.
It looked really convincing.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, the threes weren't like bad shots. They were really open, wide open shots. And the one in particular, the second one of those three, was Kamar driving baseline on the right, and then a double screen was set for McDermott on the opposite side, and he shot down to the corner, and he had a nice wide open look at three, which is like a play that was drawn out, or was drawn up by Coach Jordan. So, like, a play like that is something that they didn't implement all game, but when you have a guy who's such a great shooter like McDermott is, and people, all teams are going to respect that, I think he needed to have more of a role in that game. Yes. And I get that Golden and Thompson were playing well. But at the end of the day, your top scorers in Baldwin and McDermott need to have a bigger role. And Kamar did what Kamar was supposed to do out there for the most part. And it's hard when really your second leading scorer in McDermott is essentially not existent for like 80% of that game. So that was something that really struck me throughout that game. But let's get to the buzzer beater. Obviously, inbounds pass.
I know. The Big East.
Inbounds pass, 0.6 seconds left, under the basket, baseline. And Coach Jordan puts in true freshman John Michael Malloy to guard Mamu, and then Mamu just pretty much just bodies right around him and gets that pretty much wide open look at a layup, essentially, to win that game. The whole play in general, like what was going through your head, like when you saw John Michael in the game, and like what was just going through your head throughout that whole moment?
when I saw him, well, he played a lot with the circumstances that he's had all season, with him playing behind, you know, a player like Derek Smith's and just everybody else inside with both Bryces. I think that Coach Jordan just really wants to get him some experience in the big-time moment, and this was the ultimate big-time moment.
Yeah,
so when he went in, I thought to myself, I was like, okay, you know, is he going to defend this in some different way versus the other big men inside? So I think that they all would have defended it like they were trying to avoid the foul and just hoping for a miss, and that's what he did, but then he made it. And that's really – then the game ended.
Yeah, I mean, when you got a guy who's 6'9", 6'10", and he's about the same height as John Michael, maybe a tad taller, but, I mean, Mamu's body size in general was double John Michael's out there. So, like, there's already going to be an issue where Mamu was going to be able to push John Michael around a little bit, and he did on that play. What was interesting to me was – I think that was designed for the most part to actually go to him.
It was all in one motion.
Yeah.
I mean, he caught the ball. It was lobbed to him. He caught it all in one motion. I mean, how do you guard that?
Yeah.
Without fouling.
You can't. You just don't let him get to that spot, essentially, would be the only thing I would say. And, you know, they ran a double screen off of, like, the elbows, top of the key for Miles Powell. And it was almost as if that was the decoy to really hone in, for the defense and Butler to really hone in on him. And then there's that little, like, spin slip from Mamu to get that look at that game winner from a much better percentage shot, even if it is Miles Powell taking a fadeaway contested three. What I do have to say about that is, so Bryce Enzi's guarding Romero Gill, who's, like, 7'1", right? And Romero Gill is in a position on the floor where he's going to be non-existent for them on offense.
In the second half, when they played Butler here at home, I thought that Gill really wasn't active until the second half. So like you said, I think that's definitely valid.
Yeah, so he's standing the second screener, this double screen. He's at the elbows, top of the key area, and he's not going to do anything there. Like, if he catches the ball and makes an 18-footer to win the game, then so be it. But, like,
yeah, that's a tough shot.
But in Bryce Enzi,
they're gonna give him that shot.
Yeah, and Bryce Enzi's guarding him. So if I see that, and that's hard as a coach from the opposite side of the floor to yell for those guys to switch. But, like, as players on the floor for Butler, like, that's something that, like, Bryce maybe should have seen and been like, all right, John, you take Romero, just stay with him, just don't let him, you know, cut to the basket essentially, and I will guard Mamu down low, and I will not give up this. Whatever this floater may be, they might be trying to do. Obviously, they didn't know the play, but that was something that struck me. A center and Gill standing 18 feet away from the basket, shouting to me that there's a decoy or a little misdirection about to be done by Seton Hall, and that's ultimately what they did. And they got as good of a look as you're going to get with 0.6 seconds left.
Yeah, and who knows? You know, obviously that there's out-of-bounds plays, there's option one, option two, option three, and who knows which option that really was, you know, ultimately when they practiced that inbounds play, when they're practicing, but gosh, I mean, that's the one they needed.
Yeah, it was also important, too, Bryce Golden fouled out, so that's why John Michael was literally in the game, is because Bryce Golden had fouled out.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, that was a really great opportunity for Butler to get a game back, so...
I think it was a game back. I think it was a confidence boost. They needed, the one takeaway they needed was the W, but so many other takeaways confidence-wise and just getting Thompson back. I mean, I'll say it time and time again for every topic we're going to cover today. Huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom, it just shows how much better and how the team runs both offensively and defensively better with Thompson on the floor. So now they have to put that game behind them. And now they just go right back on the road to the 15th-ranked team in the country in Creighton. On Sunday,
yes.
Who is
number 15.
They're number 15. They're 10-4 in the conference. They're second in the conference, a game back of Seton Hall. They've won their last four. They have essentially caught fire and surprised a lot of people.
They've
just
surprised
the country.
A lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So for this game coming up Sunday, obviously – Butler really wants to win this one, and they really need to win this because they're hovering at that 5-6 line in the Big East right now. And so
10-8, 11-7. Those are the two big possibilities here.
Yeah, and so, like, what does Butler need to do going into this Creighton game to win, essentially leave Omaha with a win.
Yeah, well, I think two really big components in this game when Butler played the Blue Jays at home, they held Creighton to less than 60 points at 57, shot 46% from the field, led by 10 at the half. And this is when you had a healthy Aaron Thompson, a healthy Christian David. So you think about the depth in that area. Those were two really key components there.
And I'm really looking forward to this matchup because Creighton has very, very solid guard play just like Butler does. Butler's Aaron Thompson and Kamar Baldwin will go up against Creighton's Marcus Zagorodsky and Tyshawn Alexander, who are their best two players. So that's a really great matchup there in the guards positions for these two teams. And Tyshawn Alexander for Creighton has posted at least over 20 points the past couple of games in Big East play. And not just to mention, they're on that four-game win streak, but they've in that four-game win streak, they have won at Seton Hall and they've won at Marquette, two games that Butler has lost.
Yes.
And the at Marquette game, Butler really struggled. And they at Seton Hall game, they really did look good in a game that what they probably should have won. It just shows how important and how difficult it is to win on the road in the Big East.
Yeah, and that the Marquette game, like you just briefly mentioned, that would have been a quad one win for both teams. So, again, not a bad loss, not a ranked at that time team. But, yeah, the quad one wins are so crucial right now, especially a little bit later we'll kind of dive into it more with the net top 16 that came out a few Saturdays ago. Butler was in that top 16 conversation, number 15. Probably not in that at the moment, but if they can get a win against Creighton on the road, they'll be back in that probably five seed conversation when it comes to the tournament.
We'll see if Butler can go on the road here on Sunday, win in Omaha. That would be a huge win, both obviously resume-wise, and not that they're on the bubble or anything like that, but just, you know, when you get opportunities to have a really significant quad one victory, obviously you really want to take those. And then obviously, they come back home after this, and what I'll talk about just in a second, the next couple of games coming up. But the rest of Big East regular season plays, we're winding down to the end of that. But that game is at 4 on Sunday in Omaha. It'll be interesting to see how Butler responds, especially after, you know, getting beat off the buzzer to Seton Hall. So will they come out flat, or will they come out more, you know, ready to punch them in the mouth and send a message to the rest of the Big East that, you know, we may not be the fifth-ranked team in the country like we once were, but like we are definitely somebody to be reckoned with when it matters the most.
Yes, I have one more little tidbit about this matchup, actually. So Butler became 2-0 after beating Creighton earlier in the season. And Butler, before that Creighton game, had 24 turnovers against St. John's, come out with a two-point victory to go 1-0 in Big East play. So Butler is able to make an adjustment, even when things drastically are not going their way. They only turned the ball over 7 times against Creighton, so that's going to be a big thing for them, too.
And yeah, we'll see if I don't know the status of Derek Schmitz yet, but we'll see where he's at. I don't know for sure. Obviously, they could use him off the bench because throwing in essentially playing one true five-man in Bryce Golden throughout that game, which is why to me it was even more bizarre that he put John Michael in at the end of that game, but that's besides the point, I guess.
Smits has been really productive. When he's not scoring, just that experienced big man, that's a whole different topic. But yes, I think he is very important for this team.
Yeah, you can see he's starting to really fit in with the team. It took him a second. Took him a couple games, but he's starting to really show, you know, why he averaged a double-double at Valpo when he was there. Now, outside of this Creighton game, there's three more Big East games remaining, but two games at home, DePaul and St. John's, and then they go on the road to Xavier to end the regular season, and then obviously the Big East tournament. They're sitting at the sixth seed right now in the Big East. These three games coming up, obviously they've already lost to DePaul.
Yes.
By a lot. They almost lost to St. John's in a game that they were up major.
St. John's full court press. If that's going to be the case, they have to have a collective effort bringing the ball up the floor.
And then Xavier's going to look to, you know, really.
That's prove, a good game no matter what. That's like the built-in rivalry.
Mm-hmm. So, like,
it's different this year, though.
Yeah. So essentially what we're looking at the rest of the season, for Butler to get into this top 16 net conversation where they can get
back in it.
Yeah, back into this where they can get truly a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, what needs to happen?
Yeah, well, we just both saw that Joe Lenardi, ESPN's Joe Lenardi, released that Butler right now is not in the East anymore. They're in the Midwest, a number 6 seed against Cincy. But I think that Butler ideally needs to go 11-7, win these last 4 games, obviously beat Creighton, DePaul, St. John's, Xavier, win a game in the Big East tournament. That's what I truly think needs to happen. I mean, obviously, being perfect, there's no perfect basketball game, but Butler needs to be perfect, I think, in the next 5 guaranteed games that they have before the postseason.
Yeah, that Joe Lenardi has them as the 6 seed. They win that game, then the 3 seed's Kentucky. So that's interesting, which doesn't surprise me because I think the committee always puts some type of an Indiana team in the same side of the bracket with another Indiana team or Kentucky somewhere right there where they'll play early because television and everything like that.
Make good TV.
Yeah, it for sure does. Also, what's interesting to me in the Big East this year, obviously Seton Hall's winning the regular season right now, but anybody, like DePaul's in last in the Big East and like they're a solid team roster-wise.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, this is absolutely, it's a very deep conference, and there's no quote-unquote bad team, you could say,
oh,
this
year.
Oh,
there's no cupcake, no pushover. There are teams that are favored to win specific games, but every single team, top to bottom, it does not matter who you're playing. Even a home game and an away game, the same, it's the same vibe, the same kind of feeling, and the paint, there was actually a timeout. It was when Butler played Providence a few weeks ago here, and I thought to myself, I cannot last one possession in the paint. Just if somebody dribbled into me backing into the basket, I'm only 5'3", but just, yeah, every single team just presents physicality so much.
Yeah, it's definitely a physical lead and physical league, and it's going to be interesting because that Big East tournament, anybody's going to be able to beat anybody. So it's going to be a toss-up, which is why I think it really favors a team like Butler, who may not be performing in the Big East Conference how they were performing in the non-conference, but this Big East tournament really gives you an opportunity on a neutral site to prove to a committee and everybody really paying attention that, okay, like we're somebody you should really consider for this top 16 when Selection Sunday does approach ultimately. And I think they, to even get to that point, obviously they need to win at Creighton on Sunday.
They do.
I think if they compete and they do end up losing, it's not the end of the world, but they do need to win that game. And then these last three games after
Butler
Creighton.
Butler needs these last three. If things do not work out against Creighton, I think, I'll also kind of insert here, the reason why Butler was able to get in that top 16 conversation, the net ranking, because of that vital win against Villanova. If they can just play to that caliber, I think things will go well at Creighton.
And that vital win against Villanova,
it was huge.
As great as it was, right? Like, Kamar was All-American level type of a player. Yes. The problem with nothing against that. The problem with all that is, like, you can't ask Kamar Baldwin to have to do that every single time you're in a close game.
He's done that a couple times.
And he has.
Not just this year, in the past couple years.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm not taking anything away from Kamar Baldwin and how great he is when it matters the most. But as a team and as a fan base and as a coaching staff, you can only rely on your superstar so much. And
teams start reading it.
Yeah. And so, like, somebody else has to step up. And Sean McDermott
like
almost
Powell,
did that.
Last second shot.
And Sean McDermott almost did that at Seton Hall when he made back-to-back threes that we thought sent it to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something that – and, like, players are stepping up. Aaron Thompson, Bryce Golden stepped up huge against Seton Hall. Like, players are stepping up. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that when it matters the most, you need other players also to at least help out. And that Villanova game was great, and the buzzer beater was great. I'm taking nothing away from what Kamar Baldwin did. It was spectacular to watch. Just as the season progresses, as you get to the Big East tournament, in these close games, teams are going to just based off tape and everything, really start to figure out a little bit how what to do, maybe even throw a double team at him or whatever it may be. And all of a sudden, then somebody else on that team has to, like, you have to step up in that moment.
Is it Caleb Battle? We haven't mentioned Caleb Battle yet.
We have not mentioned him yet, and he's really, unfortunately, not playing as much as maybe people had hoped when he was recruited into here as a four-star, but I fully expect him not to play a whole lot unless you really find Aaron Thompson or Baldwin in foul trouble.
Yeah, I think he needs one more guard out there with him. But I think he's capable of making a big time shot when they need it,
because he definitely doesn't have any fear to take those shots.
He lets it go.
Yeah, and which is great. Which is great. Like, as a coaching staff, confidence. I feel like that's something that you can't really teach, is confidence. And so, if my players have confidence, and a guy like Caleb Battle has confidence, all of a sudden, I mean, that's a huge stepping stone for a freshman. And so, you know, this year may not be the best opportunities, but you know, next year you lose Kamar Baldwin, and hopefully you are the one that becomes inserted into that starting lineup, maybe. So,
a lot to
improve on for him as well. But you're right, nothing short of confidence come Battle, especially for a freshman, which is really nice to see.
Oh yeah.
One
more guy I kind of mentioned real quick, Henry Bagley.
He stepped up, especially. He's been stepping up, yeah, for sure. I mean, he's been knocking down shots. He plays good defense. Again, though, it's a guy who has experience in past years, and then this year wasn't even playing.
Yeah, was not even playing.
Then all of a sudden you're thrown in, and it's like next man up mentality.
And he even said that in the press conference when they were asked, hey, were you expecting to get minutes like this? It was right after Christian David got hurt. He just goes, next man up. That's kind of all I kept on saying.
And all the players are saying, like the coaches, the players, everybody's saying next man up mentality. And that's what I think he's taken to heart, and he's proven that he does deserve to play minutes, and he's vital. He's going to be a vital piece to the team, both offensively and defensively, because he can knock down shots, and he's proven that this year. And he will stretch the floor out, and then defensively, he's athletic. You know, he's able to stay in front of guards.
Marcus Howard, when Butler played Marquette, second half he locked down. He really did.
Yeah, he locked down Marcus Howard. And so, again, you need somebody else to beat you, and Marquette almost did it, and but Butler ended up winning that game. So, four more games left for Butler in the regular season, excuse me. Creighton Sunday night, and then Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament, which they'll be in the NCAA tournament. So
now it's that seed fluctuation. Yep.
And it's just going to see where they're placed, you know, where they're going to go, who's going to be in the little quadrant of the bracket, and so on. So that's really all we have to talk about today. Those major three talking points. Chelsea, thank you so much for joining me today. And
thank you.
I'm glad you could be on your first time doing a podcast.
I'm glad it's my first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I love men's hoops.
Yeah. I talk all day. You know, we're at the 23 minute mark, but it could easily be an hour.
23 minutes, really?
Yeah, it could easily be like an hour. So
yeah.
Thank you again. For Chelsea Groves, my name is Nick Kuster. Just make sure to look at all things Butler 360 Sports on butler360sports.com, and we'll see you next time on the next episode of Barking Out Loud.